Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that couple shouting, it's Dana and Jay. It's Dana and Jay.
All right, welcome into the latest edition of Hear That Podcast. Growling, Paulina Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic. Excited to be with you on the bye week. Fresh off a big win for the OU Bobcats.
Heck yeah.
Battle of the Bricks last night. Again, it's kind of old hat at this point to watch OU stick it to Miami. But, Jay, you were there. How was it as beautiful as it looked on as it looked on ESPN2?
Well, there was two things. One, I was really angry last night. Now I'm a little, I guess, grateful. They had one, for an entire stadium, they had one beer trailer. And
oh boy, here we go.
The line was, we waited 20 minutes and barely moved and said, nah, we don't need beer that bad. We were sitting there watching the game with about a minute left before halftime. The people that were five in front of us came back with their beers. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. So, yes, but I'm kind of glad I didn't have a bunch of beers at this point. The other thing was, there was one point, people that probably watch on TV or don't know, it's sit where you want. It's very sparsely populated. There's some guys in OU gear a section over from us, and Miami scores a touchdown, and they start going crazy. And I'm like, what the heck? And an usher even said, what are you guys cheering for? He's like, life's too short to bet the under. So yeah. They didn't care. So, and then everybody was just, because it was 10-7 at half. It's like, oh, this one's not going over. And then it was a scoring fest in the second half. OU won. Everybody went home happy. Everybody in green went home happy.
Yes. Life's also too short to not have a bet when you're actually at a Mac tilt on a Tuesday.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, let's be honest. But anyway, so yes, big win for OU last night. We've got a special episode for you today, kind of a string of special episodes that we're doing surrounding the bye week. Today, it is mid-year award day, but you know, we can't just do this old, tired, you know, trope of the mid-year awards. We gotta spice it up. So we've spiced it up with an ode to the 90s Bengals. This was inspired by our good friend Mo Egger, who will join us in a little bit. While I was on his show at Moreline Lagerhouse yesterday, we pointed out that, yeah, you can do the mid-year awards, but we should do something different. And all of a sudden, we came up with the thought, what about 90s Bengals being the namesake of all these awards? Bengals, Bengals storyline. So every award that we give out today is going to have some kind of ode to the 90s Bengals as the reason for the award. Looking forward to that. Thank you for many of you that sent suggestions in on Twitter, because there's some really good ones in there. Let's just say I'm really excited for the Gary Reasons Leadership Award coming a little bit later, which was a nice Twitter suggestion.
I had a question about that one.
Yeah, you did.
Because does that mean good leadership or bad leadership?
Well, I mean, I don't know. When you walk up and you shake the head coach's hat on the bill, I think he was standing up for his boys. Okay.
So I see.
I think it's leadership, policing yourself, right? Your own group, inside of the room of leadership. So that's just a little hint of where we're going with today's show. We got some promos, some news. We mentioned Mo. We'll recap the growler bet, and run past our boots from this past weekend. But this is going to be mostly all about talking about kind of a recap and a look forward when we talk about the awards. We have our episode with Uncle Mike, with Bengals safety Mike Thomas, he was just fantastic. It was so great. You know, I know that people might hear like, oh, backup safety, that's kind of a weird person to have. He's kind of been somebody I've been thinking about that I really wanted to have some time to really expand the conversation with for a long time for you guys to hear. We hear some of it in the locker room. He is a fascinating figure. He's a vet of this league who just hoped one day to maybe record a tackle. And here he is still playing. He has great insight on Lou Anarumo. on the NFLPA. He's a member of the executive committee that was in the negotiations for the CBA. So he knows a lot, I mean, about being a football player and about the difference of this Bengals locker room with a lot of other ones that he's been a part of. He had an incredible story about picking off Tom Brady. All of that is on that episode to go listen to. That's up now. If you want to, I highly recommend it. If you saw it and you're like, an interview with a backup, whatever, it is fantastic. It's great insight to the Bengals and the league, and just a great dude. So I wanted to thank Mike for his time. Jay, I know you thought, I mean, it was, I agree with you. Yeah. It was one of the best episodes, one of my favorite ones to be a part of.
Yes, same. And I think calling him a backup safety almost kind of does a disservice because he is a special teams captain.
He's captain. I mean, yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, I apologize. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, I mean, he's got the third most special team snaps this year. He's played a key role in what this locker room has become. Maybe not what's happening on the field defensively, but a very, very important voice in that locker room.
Absolutely. PFF all decade special teamer, by the way. He's carved out quite a niche for himself. So that episode's up there. Jay, your predictions for the second half story is up on the site. So people can go check out some of those. And let's see, on next Tuesday. So next Tuesday, leading into the Steelers game, we are going to do one of these things. We like to do these occasionally. This is a good spot to put it in, kind of in the bye area, is that you're getting ready for the Pittsburgh game, which has been deflexed to 4:25 on Sunday. Ooh. The 20th. Yay, Scribe win. out of prime time. Chiefs Chargers moves into the prime time slot. But next Tuesday, we're going to do a Burrow-sode. All Joe Burrow. Where he's been this year, how he's gotten here, what's changed with him, projection for the second half. We're going to bring in JT O'Sullivan, who's sort of an outside quarterback guru, to come and talk a little bit about him. He's going to break down some of what he's seen from Burrow this year. Have Brian Callahan, some of him talking about the evolution of Burrow. We're going to take a look into some of his analytics, some of the tape, all aspects of Joe Burrow's year, where it's been, where it's going, and him as a whole next Tuesday. So make sure you come check that out. It's going to be a fun episode and real, real focused on the guy who's going to have to drive the train, obviously, if they're going to make it back to where they want to make it. Bengals in the AFC North are kind of the Ravens win on Monday night, man. It put them, that was a big one for Baltimore to continue to get to put distance with their schedule that's in front of them, in front of the Bengals. And I believe the percentage I saw was ESPN percentage. Had them at about 91% to win the North at this time when you take into account the schedules. The Athletic Football Show has a really great episode up right now looking at the AFC wild card picture. I highly recommend you go check that out on that feed. Talks about the Bengals and all the teams that are in this mix that you're going to need to be tracking through the second half of the season. Great stuff up there. Go check that out. Jay, let's talk a little bit about news before we get into the topics, the awards. Kevin Huber, this is kind of in the news now, something we've been talking about. Talked to Darren Simmons about it more specifically. Had a rough punt again in the Carolina game. And when we talked to Darren Simmons, you know, his point was sort of, look, this has been building for a while, and over the bye, they're going to have this very real discussion about what's the best way to move forward at punter. Before we dive into our thoughts on it, I want to bring you just a little piece of Darren Simmons talking about age with Kevin Huber here right off the top, and what this means as them deciding, do they go to Drew Chrisman, who's still on the practice squad?
How are you evaluating Kevin at this point?
Well, I think he's been struggling a little bit. That's no secret, and I think he'll be the first to tell you that. He's got himself in a bit of a slump too. I think he made a pretty good analogy. He said he's great on the practice range. He's not taking it to the first tee. And his practice has been pretty solid. His pregame warm-ups have been solid. He's just not taking it to the game. He's got to figure out how to get that, from the range over to the first tee. And he's just not doing a very good job of that right now.
Are you seeing mechanically what's going on with him? Let me ask you this. Is it harder to spot the mechanics of a punter and a kicker? Is it different?
Oh, they're different because it's two completely different swings. Everything in punting is straight. It's a linear. It's a straight line. And everything in kicking, it's centrifugal. It's around. So So, you know, there's a big difference between the two. You know, with Kevin, a lot of it's feel. I've always felt that way with him. You know, without getting too technical, there's a lot of things that go into it. His get-off time's got to be quick and urgent. But, you know, sometimes he overstrides a little bit, which makes it difficult to get the ball out away from him. Again, I'm trying not to be too technical, but there's just a variety of things that have figured into his inconsistency. And it's just been a myriad of those issues. And I think as you get older, you know, your margin for error becomes really small. Some of these guys that are real strong and real powerful, have young legs, you know, can get away with some things, can get away with the get-off times being a little slower, get away with the drop not being in exactly the right spot. They can adjust. And, you know, his margin for error with some of that stuff is just reduced, you know, compared to what it used to be.
I think your practice squad, is the bye a time to evaluate where things stand?
Well, I mean, like I said, I've constantly been evaluating this whole thing. Our punting game, obviously, our punting game's got to improve. You know, we're not getting out of it what we need to get out of it in terms of flipping the field. And so it's something we'll take a look at over this bye week and try to figure out what the best thing is going forward.
Is it realistic to really make a punting change coming out of the bye? I mean, you guys have stuck with Kevin for a while. I mean, is it something that, I mean, when you talk about evaluating, is that really what's on the table, that theoretically you could go into Pittsburgh with Drew punting?
Oh, I don't know. That's something we'll talk about. I'll think about. You know, we've got whatever it is, however many days to figure that out. You know, but this is something that's certainly been building over some time. You know, for sure. You know, we got to do something to, you know, put our team in a good spot to control field position, and we've got to be better with that.
It feels like the writing is on the wall here, Jay. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it would be pretty stunning at this point if it wasn't Chrisman, when you consider all the language that you've heard from Darren and what you've seen on the field over the last few weeks.
Yes, but I wonder too. I mean, that was one of my predictions in the piece that's up today. But we felt like this was coming at the end of camp. And I thought that was kind of a maybe not as big of a surprise as it would be if Huber holds on for the rest of the year. But I thought it was a surprise they didn't go with Chrisman from the get-go. And if you remember back to the pre-camp luncheon, and Darren was talking about how for the punter, it's 60-40 punting and holding, and it's almost even 50-50 now with how rarely they punt inside the 50, and that the holding is a big part of it. And in that conversation, I asked him about where Drew has come as a punter, as a holder, and he said that doesn't factor into this at all. That they are fine with how Drew is handling the holding duties, and they had every different, because you had two holders, you had two long snappers, they had every different combination working in the preseason, and he said those were all the same. So this, it comes down to nothing other than production, and trust was a big part of this. You wondered if Drew could handle the moment. You knew, or you thought you knew, Kevin could, but it's not like Kevin's been horrible. But every game, there's one really bad punt. And Darren said that's too many. You can't have that. It's not like a cornerback, you know, an offensive tackle. You make one bad play and you're great to the rest of the game. You can overcome that. A punter only gets so many opportunities a game. And if one's terrible, you really put your team in a bad position. And I think that trust is growing in Drew Chrisman as far as handling touch, directional. Obviously, he's got the bigger leg, and the trust is evaporating with Kevin Huber, because you don't know what you're going to get each time he goes back there.
Yeah, I mean, a couple things that Darren mentioned about, look, Drew's looked really good in practice, and he's been doing well, and they've been happy with what they've seen here. The fact that they've been putting him out there in pregame warmups, and to get him into that mode of what a game week feels like, and to get his work in on the game, that's a big part of it too. And that shows where they're at with it. And holding not being an issue. It's hard to find the reason why it wouldn't happen right now. That's the biggest thing. So we'll see. That decision will probably come early next week, but we'll keep an eye on that. On the injury front, DJ Reader, all signs appear to be go for him to be back against Pittsburgh. A lot of encouraging, optimistic language from from Lou Anarumo, from Zach Taylor. But Zach Taylor pointing out, look, we'll make those types of decisions next week, early next week when you have to, about activation and all that stuff. But yeah, a lot of encouragement that it will be on schedule for where they kind of thought and hoped it would be, which would be that Pittsburgh game to have him back. So that's big on that side. Dax Hill, Chris Evans, both kind of dubbed week to week coming off of their injury. Dax with the shoulder and Evans with a grade 2 PCL. So we'll see. I'm going to guess they'll be without them for the beginning portion to give each of their 2 to 3 snaps a game that they've been getting. So we'll see how that turns out. But I mean, the Dax thing, they're really counting on him to be first off the bench. So it'll be, you know, kind of Trey Flowers coming back off his hamstring, which appears to be getting better, will kind of be back into helping out there. And Uncle Mike being back as the first backup in the safety room. Joe Mixon, offensive player of the week. That's not really a big surprise. Any other news I'm forgetting about here?
Well, it kind of gets overlooked, but I mean, Jamar Chase, Zach said no change on him. He's still in this week to week mode. And then Josh Tupou, I guess his situation is mitigated by if DJ Reader comes back, but he has been playing pretty well in there, and he's missed 3 games. They did not put him on IR, so the assumption would be they expect him to be back with Pittsburgh as well, but he has not been one that Zach has specifically addressed. But that would be a huge boost to this defensive line, because when you do get DJ Reader back, are you going to want to throw him in there with a full snap load right away, or kind of ease him back in? And if you've got Josh Tupou available as well, you can spell Tupou for Reader at times.
I think the thought is that Tupou might be a little bit longer in coming back, but you know, Jay Tufele playing well was in that backup role. Mm-hmm. I think you're not going to rush him back because you do feel comfortable with what Tufele has been able to give you in that spot too. So, but yeah, it's interesting. A guy with the limit on the IR returns this year at 8. I mean, it seems like a big number, but when you get through the whole season, you don't want to ever be up against it. So if you have one that possibly could be close, you're not using the IR. They didn't use the IR on Chase, obviously. That's a whole different story. But in this case, too, I think if you think it's going to be close, maybe proceeding with caution if you don't need it, because you want to save those just in case and not be out of IR returns when you really need them at the end of the year when roster gymnastics are all over the place. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor. Let's start diving through some of our awards here, and then our good friend from ESPN 1530, Mo Egger, will come in and join us for a few of them as well. So we're going to see where this thing goes, Jay. We haven't discussed our answers. So everybody will hearing this conversation fresh. We'll see how it turns out. Let's start here. Let's open with the Willie Anderson non-Burrow MVP award. I think every year you probably could have gone non-quarterback MVP and said, oh yeah, you know what? Willie Anderson probably deserves it for as well as he always played through all those years. So Willie Anderson non-Burrow MVP, Jay, where's your answer?
I think it, even with the injury, I think it has to be Jamar Chase. I mean, with what this offense has kind of tried to adjust to and struggle with, and I just don't know where they would be if Jamar Chase hadn't been there for the first 6 games. You hesitate to give an MVP award to someone who's missed 25% of the season or the half season that we're talking about, but I think he's that good, that dynamic, that important to this team that he needs to be the pick there.
I mean, look, I'm with you. I totally agree. And he still leads the team in receptions and receiving yards and touchdowns, or at least, I guess, receiving touchdowns. Yeah. And that's with missing the last 2 weeks. I mean, as in the early part of the season, as everything was going up and down and sideways and the line and all these – the one thing they had to kind of help carry them through was Burrow to Chase. Like, that never went away, and that helped propel them. And, I mean, New Orleans alone. I mean, New Orleans alone. If you lose that game in New Orleans, we talked about the difference you would feel if they would have lost to the Panthers to go to 4-5. Imagine not making those plays down the stretch in New Orleans and losing that game and sitting at 4-5, and not to mention the total insanity that would have ensued from pitchforks. You know, that alone might give you the non-Burrow MVP award just for that play.
Yeah, the Cleveland loss was bad enough. If you piggyback that on a loss at New Orleans, I mean, even though the Atlanta one was in there, yeah, that would have been that was one they had to get, and really it was that might be the play of the year so far, the 60-yard touchdown to Chase, because who you would think they could still drive half a field and score there, but there's no guarantees if you were picking a play of the year, that would be mine right now.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, you think about it. I mean, the close games that they've been in, they've lost all of them but that one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's, you know, when people talk about outlook for the second half of the season, I think you expect that to even out maybe a little bit. I mean, when you have Burrow, and as many times as he put them in position to win, you don't expect them to be a team that is awful in one-score games or close games. I mean, they've been so good in those because Burrow always seems to find a way. And the weird part has been Burrow has seemed to always find a way to do it, and they still kept losing them somehow. So that just feels like – that feels like the oddity of the first half to me is the fact that he kept bringing them back in these close games that they were in. We're talking about Pittsburgh. We're talking about Dallas. Baltimore too. Seemed like all of those games, man, they should have won those. Burrow felt like they put them in position to win those games, and they didn't. That feels like something that can recenter itself a little bit in the second half and see the luck maybe more go their way. All right, let's not get too far off tangent. We have a lot of awards to get to. Okay, the Ashley Ambrose Award for Most Improved. Of course, Ashley Ambrose, a free agent signing in the 90s who was okay for Indianapolis and then came to Cincinnati and had a ton of picks and a Pro Bowl. So Ashley Ambrose Award for Most Improved. And it would be fitting. I'd give you extra credit if you gave it to a free agent signing. But I that is not who I gave it to. Who'd you give it to, Jay?
I almost gave it to a free agent signing. I almost went Hayden Hurst, but I am going instead with a non-starter, Samaje Perine. He has been very – for a struggling running game, for a struggling pass-protecting offensive line, he has been really good. And I dug up some numbers. If you just look at his numbers through the first nine games of a season, he has a career high in targets, receptions, receiving yards, tied his career high in receiving touchdowns, second highest rushing yards, and highest yards per carry. He is having a terrific year in a limited role, but still definitely improvement.
And an important one. I mean, let's take the Samaje Perine conversation back to before the season.
Right.
All people are talking, how could you possibly give the ball to Samaje Perine on 3rd and 1 twice in the Super Bowl, right? And he was it was a kind of a joke of Samaje Perine and how he's come out. He hasn't allowed a single pressure in all his protections in on third downs and in 2 minutes, which has been valuable. He's the highest ranked pass protecting running back in football by PFF. I mean, absolutely. And when they've given him the ball, people have said more Perine, right? It went from how could you possibly to more Perine at one point in the season. And so I'm with you. He was certainly somebody I considered, and I'm glad that you went that direction. I'm going to go Cordell Volson. And so you bring in the rookie aspect of this, but you know, from the first unfortunate play of the season for him being one-on-one against future Hall of Famer Cam Hayward and giving up a sack and some of the early ups and downs and just where he was as a fourth-round draft pick and the expectations and the beginning of camp to where he is now. When's the last time we talked about Cordell Volson?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, he has blended in with this line and not really been part of the problem. He's acquitted himself well. He's developed nice chemistry with Jonah Williams and with Ted Karras next to him. Those guys certainly helping him along and helping mask some of these things. But, you know, he has really solidified himself as part of the answer that, you know, has been dogging this team and franchise for a long time. And, you know, I think you would be bemoaning more the healthy scratches of Jackson Carmen that have gone on. But I mean, talk about a storyline that's long forgotten. I mean, it didn't take long for that thing to work itself out and Volson to just take it and be the guy and be solid. So I'll give it to Cordell Volson. I do wish I would have gone with somebody with a free agent status as Ashley Ambrose, but I didn't. Okay, let's see. Let's go to the next one here. Okay. The Garrison Hurst is still good award for player you would like to see more of in the second half. Okay. So if people remember, the Bengals brought Garrison Hurst in coming off a brutal injury history, and out of nowhere in the 90s, all of a sudden Garrison Hurst was just running it up for the Bengals. It was ridiculous. So player you'd like to see more of, and I would say I'll put a special asterisk, extra credit also, if there's an injury history here, which I have.
I do not have an injury history, and I do not even have really much of any history at all, but it is a player I would like to see more of, and it's Trenton Irwin. I just think that guy makes plays, and if we see more of him, it means we get to talk to him more, and I love talking to that guy. I went up and asked him Monday about the almost touchdown in the corner of the end zone, if he saw any replays that indicate he really did get it. He said no. He was talking about it. And I said, is there a small part of you that's glad you didn't get the touchdown? Because if you get that, then Joe Mixon doesn't get the franchise record. He's like, hell no. He's like, I'm not going to sugarcoat that. He's like, I wanted that touchdown. He's like, I'm very happy for Joe that he got the record, but no way. There's not any piece of me that is happy I did not get that touchdown. I should have got that touchdown, and I think he's right.
You know what I really enjoyed about that and I thought was telling was – how much Joe Burrow and T. Higgins talking to them after really wanted Trenton to get that touchdown. They were just pissed off that he didn't afterwards, you know, and Burrow on the field had a big reaction to when they said no touchdown.
Yeah.
And in the locker room, everybody was talking. There's a lot of love for guys like that and in that room. And I think that speaks. This is kind of an Arby's. We don't have an Arby's slated. But this is just kind of a weird story. It's an unfortunate thing that happens sometimes. It just makes me, I couldn't help but laugh at Ben Baby from ESPN was talking to Trenton Irwin yesterday in the locker room at one point. He's happened to see this, and they're talking in a very normal way. And in the middle of the conversation, I guess he was going to take a shower. Trenton Irwin just like took his clothes off in midstream conversation. Like there, I feel like there is no area in life where there isn't a contract that is once a conversation starts, everyone's clothing situation stays the same throughout. Like you can't just take your pants off. Like it's just such a weird locker room thing that can happen. It happens occasionally. It's so startling, you know, and it's just like, wow, okay, I'm just happy I wasn't the one having that conversation because it will certainly throw you off. Okay, my Garrison Hurst is still good award for the player you want to see more of. I'm going to say Akeem Davis Gaither. He has played well this year. He's made plays when given the chance. He's proved versatile. He's made plays as a blitzer. He's made plays in coverage. You know, I understand they have Logan Wilson and Jermaine Pratt, and they're both playing well. But, you know, his snap count, 176, is fine. You know, it's hard to find ways to use the third linebacker, but I think he could be used more in that hybrid role. I just feel like I want to find ways to see more of him because I feel like he's played well and is taking a step. And coming off his injury last year was a big deal, being all the way back, and he looks fully healthy from that. So that's my injury extra credit that I get in the Garrison
I like that one.
Award. All right, let's bring our good friend Mo Egger from ESPN 1530. What's going on?
How we doing, guys?
Oh,
hey, Mo.
We're doing good. Yesterday at Moline Lager House, we sort of stumbled into the concept of spicing up the the trope of the mid-year awards with 90s Bengals. And so we have some 90s Bengals names and takes that we're going to pull out here we have four awards for the three of us to go through here to get into this. Are you excited about this? Or do you support the names and ideas that we've thrown into these?
Yeah. The fact that these are named after iconic members of the some of the Bengals' most dreadful teams makes me happy.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Yes. Okay, let's start here. This is the, I think year five will be the one Dave Shula really writes the ship award for preseason prediction you'd most like back. We've all had lots of things and takes and that were said back in August and thoughts about this Bengals team. And just like saying, you know what, definitely year five's the one. Which one, Mo, would you most like back from then?
When I went on and on and on about how Joe Mixon was going to have a monster season, and I didn't quantify it with anything statistical. I didn't, wasn't, he's going to lead the league in rushing, or he's going to have 1,500 rushing yards or 1,800 yards from scrimmage, anything like that. I just talked about him having a monster year. It was an improved offensive line, and I think how we knew teams were going to play the Bengals, begging them to run. I thought this offense and this running back were going to be equipped to take advantage and have Joe put up insane numbers. Maybe this is something we revisit at the end of the season. If it turns out that his performance against Carolina ends up being the start of something big, but we've gone from me wondering how huge of a season can he have to now wondering if he's even going to be on the team next year. And so there is a preseason take I would like to have back. I said often and emphatically, Joe Mixon's going to have a monster season. As it turns out, he's had but one monster game.
Yeah. Jay, what do you got?
That was one of mine because I just thought the offensive line signings were going to be a bigger deal for Joe in the running game than they were for Pat protecting Burrow. But the one I most want to have back, and it's more Bengals adjacent, but I told every show I went on, I said, everyone's forgetting about the Steelers, but they have a great defense and they actually are going to be better at quarterback, whether it's Trubisky or Pickett, better than what Ben Roethlisberger was at the end of his career. They are going to be players in this division. And yeah, they are terrible. And I'm sure that disappoints no Bengals fans, except for maybe the ones that like watching them in primetime. But yeah, that's one I'd like to have back because that looks really bad. The Steelers are as bad as they've ever been in a long time.
That's good. I will say the one that I would like back is the Dax Hill is going to change the dynamic of this defense. I mean, the versatility, the way they can use him, he's the chess piece that Lou Anarumo has always wanted.
Yep.
And hey, for three snaps at a time, I guess he's been that, right? But the total I whiffed on the total lack of usage and reluctance to use somebody who had looked so good in camp, and they had talked so much about how he would be a perfect fit for the extra sub stuff that Lou Anarumo wanted to do. I did not see that coming, and I definitely wish that I could have a lot of those thoughts back.
You weren't alone. I think everybody thought we were going to see a lot more Dax.
Yes, and maybe we will at some point down the stretch, but it's certainly not – he's certainly not a chess piece outside of maybe like a pawn that you start the game off with and go forward, and then it gets whacked.
And gets taken.
Yes. Okay, second award here, Mo. They probably should have taken the Saints deal instead of Achilles award for preseason take you wish you would have screamed louder. What is your preseason take you wish you would have screamed louder, Mo?
That they should offer Von Bell some of the money that Jesse Bates turned down. Most underrated player on the team, Jay, you wrote about him a few weeks ago. I mean, you talk about amid all these great acquisitions from other teams, he's kind of the guy that we bring into the conversation later than everybody else. And I sort of feel like he kind of gets portrayed as this, like, you know, old dude, right? He's not even, I don't think he's yet 29 years old. He never plays poorly. We spent, God knows I did, hours upon hours upon hours going on and on and on about Jesse Bates. Meanwhile, nobody talked about Von Bell. He's played well this season. He's a big part of this defense. He would cost, I think, a fraction of the money that Jesse turned down. Do we really want to go all young in the secondary next year? I wish we would have made a bigger deal about this. I wish we would have made a bigger deal. I know I mention it occasionally. This should have been my thing. The Bengals should offer Von Bell some of the money that Jesse Bates turned down. And Von should say yes.
Von Bell turns 28 on December 12th. So, I mean, still young, 27
right
now.
Yeah.
What do you got, Jay?
I hate that this one's here because I hate what happened to the guy. And I wasn't alone in this by any means. But I think, Paul, you were right there with me. We said that that Chidobe Awuzie was going to break out and that he was going to be have a Pro Bowl type year. And he did. He was having one until the injury obviously derailed his season. But I was struggling to find one where I was a lone wolf. And so that's the one I'm going with, because I think that's the one that I was most right about. And Paul, you were right there with me. Everyone thought Chidobe was going to have this great year, and he was. And it's just it's a real shame that we're not going to get to see him play till next year.
Yeah, I totally agree. Mine would be this. It would be and one that was discussed a lot, but I just feel like we never quite I wish I would have emphasized it even more. The line is going to take time. You know, the Collins injury, the Collins injury, the Kappa injury, you know, we barely talked about the fact that Kappa missed so much time, was coming off a core muscle surgery too, and he was working his way into camp. I mean, we all talked about how they never played together, but I think everyone still, despite all of that, and a rookie at left guard, I think despite all of that, the expectation still was they will instantly show up week one and it should just mold together and start mauling people. They spent all this money. It's going to be fixed. And there was not enough screaming, I guess, if you want to call it that, about, look, this is going to take some time when you consider all the different pieces that are coming together, how little time they actually spent working together, and ended up being a big part of the early portion of this season. They've certainly stabilized some. How much, we'll see where their ceiling is. But I think that was something that probably I wish I would have even emphasized even harder, as much as we were at that point in the season. All right, let's just take a quick break. All right, next, the Big Daddy Dan Wilkinson Award for Biggest Disappointment. It's really hard, Mo, to pick a namesake for this. There were so many options when you went through the 90s Bengals. Like, who should – this feels like the – this is like the MVP award of an obscure 90s Bengals, you know, award ceremony, because there were so many disappointments, so many great nominees to choose from. But I think Big Daddy was never really hurt. He was a number one pick. He just wasn't very good. And it was kind of a real, an underrated underachiever in Bengals history.
Yeah, you know, sort of everybody talks about the year after, Kajana Carter, and what happened with him. But, I mean, he had massive bad injury luck. Dan Wilkinson was just bad.
Yeah.
So, and you know, the remarkable thing about him, as much as he is regarded as one of the bigger busts ever, he played like 12 or 13 years in the NFL.
13, yeah.
Yeah, went to Detroit, I think Washington, and was never a star, but was, you know, a more than serviceable player. I would have killed for serviceable when Dan Wilkinson was a Cincinnati Bengal. I'm going to go Jonah Williams. Not that Jonah's been awful, but, you know, look, I watched him get worked by a couple of elite pass rushers. This was a guy that I thought this season had the potential to make a huge leap. He was the one incumbent offensive lineman. He's kind of the foundational piece, 11th overall pick. Last year, he played and got through the season. And, yeah, I admire the fact that he gutted it out and came back and played pretty well after getting injured against the Baltimore Ravens, coming back in that game and doing okay. But I just – there have been way too many times where I've thought that guy doesn't look like a foundational protector of Joe Burrow's blind side. I expected more. I haven't gotten it from Jonah Williams.
Yeah, that was my pick as well. And it's relative because, you know, first round pick, number 11 overall, you expected this leap this year. It hasn't been there. He hasn't been terrible, but he's not been what you expected and really what you need if you're going to move forward with this offensive line to protect Burrow a little better. And the center of that line's been good. Paul mentioned the injury to Collins, so he has a bit of a pass, but no excuses for Jonah. He has to play better.
Okay, I'm kind of taking this a little bit outside of what you would normally think, and I'm going to give it to the Steelers game. Like, that game is really the difference between, I mean, how do you feel about the Bengals at this point? If they're 6-3, They came back and overcame the slow start against Pittsburgh. They kicked the extra point chase with the walk-off winner against Pittsburgh. And then otherwise, the schedule looks kind of like something you might think it would. A tough loss in primetime to the Ravens, who are very good. The Cowboys are good. You lose at the buzzer to them. You had a clunker against the Browns, whatever. But you're 6-3. You won all the games you really should have for the most part. And you feel fine. But the fact that you had five turnovers and botched two chip shots that would have won you the game against an awful Pittsburgh team that you had no business losing to is one that just feels like the one outlier this season and the one game that has hung over their heads the entire time when you think about, oh, it could come down to a tiebreaker, could be they might be fighting for a wild card and need one extra game. And just the fact I don't know if it's too strong to use unpreparedness because there was a lot of just bad mistakes in there, but from everybody not being ready for what Pittsburgh was going to bring and all those turnovers to lose that game is the biggest disappointment of the season, more so than just any single player's play, because it just hangs out there as where you'd feel so much better about this team if it weren't for that game.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I first jotted this down, I wrote down 0-3 against the AFC North. And then I figured the exercise was better aimed at a player. And so poor Jonah Williams ended up taking the bullet. But I mean, to me, over the first half of the season, or roughly the first half of the season, the Pittsburgh game stands out, I think, more than the other two. The Browns game was at least on the road. They were coming off, you know, Jamar Chase getting hurt. Cheeto got injured during the game. But the fact that they played as defending division champs, three games against conference opponents, and let's face it, haven't played well in any of them and have lost all three, that looms over everything that's going to happen over the course of the next 8 weeks. That, to me, is a massive disappointment. And, you know, two of the games coming in primetime maybe amplifies the disappointment. Certainly the Pittsburgh game with Joe Burrow throwing five picks or turning the ball over five times is not something anybody ever could have imagined. But all right, you had a chance to sort of make up for it in the division, at least, if you beat Baltimore. If they get a stop, they do. You could make up for it to a degree if you beat Cleveland. They were offensively non-competitive. All that added up to me from the standpoint of most disappointing first half of the season development. To me, it's that donut they've put up against division foes.
Absolutely. All right, let's wrap it up here with the Jeff Query Award for biggest surprise of the season. I mean, it also could go to best mullet, but we'll just focus on performance on the field. Query, beloved amongst early 90s Bengals. For those of you that don't know, give a Google and tip your cap. What do you got, Mo?
Weirdly, Akeem Adeniji has come in twice, and both times I felt this nervous sort of pit in my stomach thinking this is going to go poorly. And both times he held his own. Now on both occasions, first for Jonah Williams against Baltimore, then for Lael Collins against Atlanta, the player that Akeem replaced came back into the game. But when he was out there, you didn't notice him. And you know, look, this is a guy that a lot of us wondered, is he even going to be on the team? And maybe what we've seen is a guy evolving into a pretty important role. The swing tackle can play both left, can play both right. And my wager is at some point he's going to have to see the field this year. And I feel a little bit better about that happening if that does happen. My original thing that I wrote down Cordell Volson, and not because I think anybody is surprised that he's played all right. If they weren't paying attention during the preseason. But I think for a lot of folks, the way him getting the starting left guard gig was portrayed was, well, Jackson Carman lost it maybe more than Cordell won it. I don't think that's a fair characterization. He's played well, but on the offensive line in particular, but really even across the entire team, on two different occasions this year, when Hakeem Adeniji left the game after appearing in it, I said to myself, wow, that didn't go as bad as I feared. And that was surprising to me on both occasions.
Yeah, I think they've scored on three of the four possessions that Adeniji was in for. So I had a 1A and a 1B here. And the one was Volson, and it kind of goes back to what Paul said before you jumped on, Mo, where I just I thought there was going to be more plays like that first play of the year where he just got beat really bad, gives up a sack, and you haven't seen that. So that's been a surprise. But I think I'm going to go with Von Bell's four interceptions. He had two picks, two career picks before this year. He's got four this year. He's one off the NFL lead. He leads the Bengals, obviously, with that. I don't think he's played great overall. He's been what you've expected, but the turnovers have been big. The four interceptions for a guy that only had two in his entire career, I think, is the definition of a surprise.
I am going to focus on the interior defensive line for a couple of reasons. One, I think the biggest surprise has been how well the run defense has held up since DJ Reader went out. I mean, there was a lot of fright of those four teams they were facing, the top four rushing DVOA attacks in the NFL without Reader, and they did really well. I mean, Nick Chubb's worst day of the season in terms of yards per carry, and they kept handing it to him. They did a decent job. Atlanta, this great varied rushing attack, and that's how they're going to take it to you. Granted, score takes them out of that a little bit, but they did a great job there against Carolina. You know, that is, without Reader there, a great tip, you know, a feather in the cap for the personnel staff for finding Jay Tufele to help mix that in, for Zach Carter playing well enough to help mix that in, for Sam Hubbard helping make up for it by making even more plays as a run stopper, strong man of Moeller, of course, Mo. And, you know, but everything that's happened there to make up for that, it has been, you know, one of the most pleasant surprises because the other side of it is DJ Reader playing at this level. Like, DJ Reader has always played at a high level, and they have had high expectations for him. What he was doing in those games before he got hurt, the three games plus, I mean, he was playing all pro level defensive tackle, disrupting everything. And so I think the combination of what they have there and kind of evolved to me is something that I'll put in for biggest surprise.
Before we go, I don't want to do the whole betting session because I know we're, that's not on the – but I need to give Mo credit for maybe the bet of the year last week. He picked Bengals minus 7.5, so he won that easy. His other bet was P.J. Walker under the passing number. I forgot to look up the passing number, but I'm pretty sure 9 was under the number.
Correct.
Easy win for Mo there.
What if it was over under 8.5? do you have the standings for the year, our mid-year standings in front of you, Jay, or do you have to look those up?
I have them. I'd rather not read them, but I have them.
Just so we know for the record where things stand.
Yeah, Paul hit a parlay last week. He had Patriots and Bears hit both of those to hit. He was the first one to win a parlay. So Paul is in front at plus 186. Mo is in second at plus 135.4. And I'm minus 24.4.
That's unfortunate.
It's very unfortunate. It's very fortunate. This is fictional.
All right. I appreciate it, Mo. Thanks for joining in the inspiration for all of these great 90s Bengals topics. And do you have a favorite 90s Bengal before you sign off?
It's actually somebody we mentioned because he remains a part of the name. He's basically the name of my fantasy football team, which is Jeff's Query.
Like, that's great.
Jeff Query, I've never looked up his numbers, but it felt like in some absolute routes where they would lose, like, you know, 38-12, Jeff was good for like 6 catches for 64 yards and that blonde hair flapping under his helmet. Oh. So I'm going to go Jeff Query.
Jeff Query. He is. he should be hanging in the red ring of honor.
In all honesty, I mean, in no BSing, my second favorite Bengal of all time is Jeff Blake. Like, I love Jeff Blake. Jeff Blake got Paul Brown Stadium built. The Shake and Blake era was fun. I went to Pittsburgh when I was a freshman in college. They smoked the eventual AFC champions on Thursday Night Football because Jeff Blake was just dropping bombs to Darnay Scott. I love Jeff Blake. And one of my favorite people that I've ever had a chance to interview, we did a Throwback Thursday segment. Jeff came on and was awesome. In my hierarchy, it's Boomer 1, Jeff Blake 2.
Query 3.
My all-time top 2 favorite Bengals, Jeff Query is maybe he rounds out the top 5.
Blake will tell you some good stories, Jay. You've heard some good stories from Jeff Blake as well. He'll tell you a few.
Yeah, he will. And I hope he was clothed when you interviewed him.
Admittedly, well, naked, right, Jay?
Yes. It was a phone interview. This was a phone interview, but yes.
Thank God.
We got him on the Jeff Blaze also now at the Super Bowl. He looked like he was 75 years old. Grecian formula, Jeff. But yes, I do love me some Jeff Blake.
Mo, I appreciate it. You have a wonderful day, and we will catch you next week.
I waited in line at McGalpin's in Crestview Hills to get Jeff Blake's autograph, okay? I got Jeff Blake stories. See you guys.
Later, Mo. Did not expect a McGalpin's drop here today, but no. I appreciate it. We've got many more of these awards to get to, Jay. So let's keep it rolling here. We did the Garrison Hurst is Still Good Award for player you want to see more of. So let's go now with the Brian Milne Should Never Touch the Ball Award for player you want to see less of. I don't know if this was a hard one, or what did you have, Jay?
It was kind of hard. I went Mike Thomas. I just mainly because I want to see of more Trent Taylor and Trent Irwin. But Mike Thomas, 9 targets this year, 2 catches. He had the bad drop against Cleveland. He's fine on special teams, but I almost hesitate to mention him as wide receiver 4 now. I think Taylor or Irwin deserve that role. He gives you speed that those other two don't have, but I just think they're more reliable and more playmakers than what he's shown so far.
I have the same answer. Yeah, I have the same answer, and it kind of goes back to another one of the awards we talked about, things you wish you would have screamed louder, and we screamed a lot. I mean, I can go back to, we have many social posts from off-season stories of the Bengals need to be more aggressive for the backup wide receiver spot. It's something that we did. I probably didn't say that I should have screamed it louder because we always were saying it over and over again. I mean, whether it was Keelan Cole or any number of these guys that were sort of out there, they never really aggressively went after. In the draft, they never really went after. And I think that has shown up here as Mike Thomas has so far been – he's played a decent amount, actually, in some of these games between Higgins going out and Jamar going out, and has really done very little. You can tell his trust has diminished from Joe Burrow. And if you don't have that, you don't have snaps. And I think that's what we saw last week. All right, let's go to the next one. We've got the Tremaine Mac Asleep at the Wheel Award for just – Jay, that was your I'll put you on the hook for that one. You like that one.
Well, I have a friend who I swear once every year texts me, who was the Bengals receiver that got arrested for sleeping in his car on the suspension bridge? He can never remember his name. And I guess it always comes up in a story, but he can't remember his name. I'm like, I always have to text him back. It was Tremaine Mack. And I don't want to make light of an OVI, but I thought that it was too easy to throw in as an award category here. So I'm not going to do an overall body of work asleep at the wheel, but Dax Hill getting quick snapped while putting in his mouthpiece and getting burned for a 53-yard pass in Cleveland definitely fits the definition of asleep at the wheel.
Yeah, I'm going with a similar concept for this. It is going to be Akeem Adeniji and Drew Sample just not blocking Minka Fitzpatrick on the game-winning extra point attempt. Both of them just kind of doing some sort of soft, lean elbow thing while Minka just runs right in and knocks it down. Talked about the Steelers game a little bit ago. A little effort not being asleep at the wheel there on a standard extra point, and the Bengals are 6-3. So just that one, I think, is an asleep at the wheel for me. Two people driving. It's like when you're in the driving class, right? When you're 16 and both people can hit the brakes or whatever. Both people just staring off at the lights and the trees on that one. All right. I moved this one up here. The Derek Fenner is the best running back award for most disappointing position group on the Bengals. If you remember the year where Jay, you've looked this stat up where Derek Fenner, it was the lowest rushing yards that in Bengals franchise history for a leading rusher. I think it was 460 or something like that. Derek Fenner, 1994. So most disappointing position group for you, Jay?
I'll say special teams. Chris Evans has not returned kicks the way that we thought he was so good in the playoffs. Didn't get a chance early, but they have been kicking it to him lately, mainly because he's not getting great returns. We've already discussed Kevin Huber's issue, and Evan McPherson is missing at a much higher rate than he was last year. And he's not worried about it. Darren Simmons isn't worried about it, but it is disappointing, especially when you consider that, you know, a couple of those misses cost them that Pittsburgh win that we've already discussed. And the one miss last week, 48 yarder, when you're already up by a ton, that's not a big deal. But as a body of work, I think Trent Taylor's been a very nice surprise as a punt returner, but the rest of that special teams just hasn't been great.
I mean, too many men on the field, returns. Mm. I mean, it's been a cycle of stuff happening over there. Also underrated miss, that Browns miss that would have made it 8-3, and you'd be kicking off and giving a long field. Instead, it was a short field, and the Browns kicked the field goal instead. So instead of a 5-point game at halftime, which is one that feels very normal, you're down 11-0, and the Browns come out and score after that, and it's game over.
Yeah.
A big one that kind of flipped the script there. For me, it's the running backs. I mean, and outside of obviously what's happened last week, I know we had P. Ryan, but, you know, whatever's been going on with Chris Evans having zero run and the Mixon issue of whatever's been going on with Mixon unable to get it going until this game against Carolina, I think that has been probably a disappointing position group. You just expected to have a little bit more going on. But, yeah, I P. Ryan, I think, isn't the outlier here that's not part of this conversation, but in general, hoping for more from that position group. All right, let's go next. The 1992-94 award for most Groundhog Day aspect of the season compared to last year, which those 3 years just all blend together as the same pile of crap until Jeff Blake showed up, basically. Shout out to JD Biting on Twitter for that one. Let's go. What do you got, Jay?
Yeah, the O-line giving up all these hits and sacks, more through the first 9 games this year than they gave up through 9 last year when they gave up the most in franchise history. So it's just, I know they downplay it, and they like to talk about volume a lot, but they're actually giving up a higher percentage of snaps per dropbacks this year. It's almost not a Groundhog Day because that would have been if they kept the line the same. They improved the line, but yet the production is even worse than it was. So there's been a lot of talk about the O-line and the sacks given up, and it definitely has that Groundhog Day feel to it.
Yeah. Groundhog Day for me is the record and the uneven offense, and that maybe sound easy, but I mean 5-4 at the break with an offense that's kind of gone a little bit up and down over the course of it and working their way through some things, but in the highs have been high. You know, last year, similar type of thing, the Baltimore game, but then you'd have some clunkers on top of it, and then they really found their way as the season went on. But sitting there at 5-4 at the break and with a lot of big name opponents ahead of them on the schedule was the case last year. It is the case again this year. And so I think there's a lot to choose from here. There are a lot of similarities. I think the difference is the expectations coming in. I mean, the difference in how 5-4 feels is, one, you've clearly had a run of beatable opponents, but also just the expectations that you would look more like the Chiefs and the Bills and less like last year's first half Bengals. So for that fact, it's different. But really, in actuality, there's a lot of similarities when you talk about the way that they look. So I'll say that just sort of, you ran through those numbers, Jay, from last year to this year. And it's amazing the similarity, whether you're talking about Burrow or just overall as a whole offensively through 9 games at the break, how much it all looks very similar to what last year did.
Yeah, and really the sacks were the only thing that were majorly different, and they were worse. So that is not a good thing.
Yeah. All right, the Craig Yeast Best Special Teamer Award. That shout out to Obscure Bengals on Twitter, who this was basically made for him. He really should have been our third person in here. The Craig Yeast Best Special Teamer Award. Who you got, Jay?
I actually had a nice conversation with Craig East at training camp this year. He was there for the Rams joint practices because his son was a sixth round draft pick of the Rams this year. So it was good I won't say catch up with him because I didn't cover the team when he was here, but it was good to talk to him. I'm going to go back to our friend Uncle Mike here. He is kind of the definition of obscure. He's playing on all four special teams, personal protector on punt team. Sorry, I can't talk today. But yeah, his value on the field and special teams and in the locker room. And he hits that obscure moniker. I if there weren't two Mike Thomases on the team, I wonder how many people would even know he was there.
Yeah. I'm going to go to old reliable Stanley Morgan. You know, You notice it when he's not there, you know, a little bit, and how when there are punts, it seems like, well, where's the gunner that's always there to kind of force the fair catch or whatever. He's a noticeable player when he is out there and is healthy, and he does bring a lot of juice to them. I think he is into Maven status at this point, special teams Maven. I've upgraded him from Ace, so he's an easy one to go with. All right, next. The Dave Shula worst decision of the year while looking unnecessarily confident award. Shout out John Schroeder on Twitter for that idea. And included the pictures that went along with it. What do you got, Jay?
Well, not necessarily due to the unnecessarily confident look, but the worst decision, the shovel pass on fourth down in Baltimore. A lot of people look at the Philly special play call. And it was big of a problem with that one. The shovel pass just it didn't have a chance. You're doing it to Stanley Morgan of all people. No discredit to Stanley Morgan. There are better options there. And the whole point of the shovel pass is if it doesn't work out, it's an incompletion, not a fumble. You move on to the next play. So there's kind of a built-in doubt there of whether it's actually going to work to run that on fourth and goal. I think that was Zach's worst play call of the year.
Yeah. I mean, we really could just lump that entire series in there at the end. I mean, it's a game changer. It feels like they win that game if they punch that in. I have the Philly special. You know, it's just all the trickeration that didn't feel very necessary down there. But you can go either direction. I don't think there's any doubt that that was the low moment for this coaching staff when it comes to decisions. And there's been a bunch. I mean, there's certainly been a lot that we've questioned along the way. But that's the one that stands out the most, is just too cute, too in your own head, too trying to be special and this, that, and the other, and rather than just getting the job done. Notice we've seen a lot more straight ahead, QB sneak, handing it off of the middle, more basic plays ever since then. I think they've decided that cuteness at the goal line is no longer a direction to go since then. All right, we're going to keep rolling here. The Sam Weish was fired or retired award for most overblown storyline of the year. Of course, people remember when that happened. It was Christmas in the early 90s, and there was a whole I quit. No, you were fired. What exactly happened there? It didn't really matter if you were fired or you quit. It was an overblown storyline, but something people spend a lot of time talking about. Jay, what do you have for overblown storyline of the year?
They came out and flat and started 0-2 because they didn't play their starters in the preseason. You can't deny they came out flat and started poorly, and there was a lot of things wrong with the starts of the season. But just because they didn't get their starters a few snaps in the preseason, I don't think that had anything to do with it. There was maybe the shortened OTAs, the lighter approach they took through that whole offseason, the Burrow appendectomy putting that whole offense behind. There's a lot of reasons for it. There's a lot of teams that aren't playing starters in the preseason, and they're not having that kind of flat start. I thought that was overblown, that was the reason for 0-2.
I would agree with that being an overblown. It was something to talk about. It was the only thing really going on back then. I'm torn on this one. I've got a couple different directions I want to go. I'm gonna say the Joe Burrow had an appendectomy, and that's why he's struggling early in the year. I think that was a deal, right? This is why I struggle with this. And I'm not saying that it wasn't a deal. I'm not saying that Burroughs wasn't trying to work his way back to full health, and that his lack of reps in training camp didn't in some way play a role in some of the struggles getting going. But I don't think that was that big of a deal when it really came to how those first couple of games went. I really don't. I think that he was plenty healthy enough, and it was more of Pittsburgh and Dallas beat the crap out of their lines, and he wasn't able, and they had not figured out yet how much they need to get back to being a quick offense and getting the ball out of their hands fast, rather than thinking the line's just going to hold up. An error on their part. Not so much, Burrow's clutch appendix is gone, and now he's no longer the player that he was for a few weeks. I think there's a lot of thought that was really holding him back, and I just think that was overblown and never anything that I ever got a sense was an issue talking to anybody. The Gary Reasons Leadership Award that we referenced earlier, and we discussed whether it would be good leadership or bad leadership, whatever it was. It's about, you know, the team having its leader and policing itself. As Gary Reasons shook the hat of Dave Shula back in the day. Shout out Will Liu for bringing that up on Twitter. What do you got, Jay?
I've got Chidobe Awuzie. You wrote about it in TWIB, just the incredible resolve and just introspection that he had after that injury, and talking about how he's going to stick around. You know, a lot of these guys get hurt like that. You don't see him again. He's going to stick around. He's going to be in meetings. He's going to help the team, help the young DBs. Monday, he came through the locker room on crutches, and I was like, hey, did they let you stand on the sideline, or they make you watch in a booth? He's like, they told me I couldn't be on the sideline, but I went down there anyway. And you see that all the time when guys that don't have great mobility, they don't want them on the sideline, because you never know when a play can run over. That's why DJ Reader wasn't on the sideline for his first couple games of his injury. And for Awuzie to be down there, still hasn't had surgery yet, still has swelling, still on crutches, and he wants to be on that sideline so he can help the young DBs with what they're seeing and their adjustments and all that. I think he was a great leader even before he got hurt, and it's gone to a new level since the injury.
And they'll miss having him around all the time once he has his surgery and is working his way back. I'm going to take, this may be the easy way out, but I don't think there's another answer. It's Joe Burrow. They have been on such a roller coaster this year, and the microscope has been so on them, and the pressure and the expectations. Uncle Mike talked about this yesterday. I thought it was great, talking about how, look, guys might not admit it, but they're admitting it now. Like, the expectations were real. That did change the way some guys felt and played. And the thing I think that has helped them manage that has been that even-keeled nature of Burrow. Everyone looks to him. And when he is straight ahead, saying the right things, unfazed by the great games, unfazed by the bad games, dropping the relax on us earlier in the year. I mean, all of that stuff has, I think, kept everybody going in the right direction, despite the expectations, the pressure they were feeling, the pressure was being applied from the outside, the things being said on the outside. All of that has been, you know, really at extremes with this team this year, early in the year. But Burrow has been the one thing keeping everybody straight down the middle, and I think that is notable. I would throw an honorable mention at Ted Karras,
yes,
who has come in free agency and become an instant voice and leader for the offensive line room and really entire offense, and an instant captain, and kind of blown me away how somebody can come in off of free agency and kind of own the room, a room that had a lot of leaders already as far as the whole locker room, and become such a guy. So I give him the honorable mention, but I think the more important role has been Burrow's even-keeled nature, kind of keeping everybody from getting too nauseated by the roller coaster. All right, two more. Here we go. The It Will Never Be Synergy Field to Me Award for favorite new Bengals sponsorship. Plenty to choose from, Jay.
Yeah.
I believe they're up to 89 new sponsors this year or whatever it is. So what is your favorite of the new Bengals, million Bengals sponsors?
Okay, maybe it's recency bias, or maybe it's not. It's just damn good. But I'm going with the Killer Brownies company. they just announced it, and Grippo's. And if Grippo's could please bring back the cheese nibs, that would be great. But we got to the press box. I was like, I can't believe they just announced these sponsors. If there's no Grippo's in the press box, there's no Killer Brownies. At halftime, they brought out the Killer Brownies, and I had one, and it was killer. It was very big, and it was very, very good. And I hope that is a new halftime staple.
I like that you're addicted to the nibs. I appreciate that.
Why did they quit making them? They're so good. For people that don't know, they're cheese puffs, but they're Grippo's cheese puffs, and they are addicting and they're delicious. And for some reason, they just quit making them, and everyone loves them.
So bitter. I'm gonna go for Swift Meats. I really appreciate anything that just shows up in like random transactions and uniform announcements from some Swift Meats company that no one's ever heard of. I enjoy, you know, how much every single company in Cincinnati has tried to latch onto the Bengals train, no matter in whatever way possible. And man, Swift Meats, there they are. It's like, what do you mean? This tweet is sponsored by Swift Meats? I'm not. What are Swift Meats? It's just everything about it has just kind of made me chuckle every time I see it. So I'm going with Swift Meats for their contribution. All right. Last one I have here. This isn't 90s, so I feel bad even including it. However, it deserves to be recognized. The Kelly Washington Squirrel Best Celebration Award. There's been many this year. Jay, what do you have for best celebration of the year?
Well, we could have gone with the 90s theme and gone with the Achilles Smith worst celebration because he did the throat slash. That was not a good thing. And I thought I did not like the snow angels last week at all. I think that's tired. There's not even snow on the ground.
Tired?
Everybody does snow angels.
Snow angels?
I mean, after they win the Super Bowl, they're all sitting there doing it in the confetti. It's just everybody's doing it. Although you're right. I do love group celebrations. And so that's why I'm picking the other one from that game, the Remember the Titans celebration. It goes the one I really like, the replacements dance they did last year after a mix and touchdown. The Remember the Titans one this year was my favorite. I did enjoy Joe Mixon counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 after his fifth touchdown. But I'm a big fan of these group celebrations. And the Remember the Titan ones was spontaneous. They were running out. They scored so many touchdowns. They were running out of ideas, and they kind of came up with that one on the fly. And I also like that Cam Taylor-Britt, a rookie, was kind of in the middle and the leader of that one.
I agree. I picked Remember the Titans as someone who really loves that movie, and it just came so out of nowhere. I really appreciate you've never seen it before. It is a big group celebration. That is my choice. I would say, you know, honorable mention to B.J. Hill trying to jump into the stands and failing miserably. I talked to him about that this week. He's like, it's a lot higher than you think. Like, yeah. I know. You don't appreciate it until, like, yeah, those receivers, they've got springs, okay? Like, it's easy for them. 306 pounds of B.J. Hill, a little harder to do. So for that, I will throw that in there. But there's been some good ones this year. But Remember the Titans to me has been far and above the rest. I you know, you can go back to some other ones, but I think that the whole team has been good, because so many of those, the defense ones where everybody runs down, it all looks the same. They pose, or they, you know, whatever. This was totally different. So I'm with you. I think that is undeniably the best one of the year. And I don't think that's recency bias at all.
Yeah. And I was wrong. That was after an interception, right? That was not a touchdown celebration. Yeah. So
after an INT. Yep. Okay. Jay, we should wrap this up, and what do we have for our run, pass, or boots from last week?
Okay. Sorry about this. I'm slow. All right. We had what would be greater, Brian Burns pressures, Joe Mixon yards per attempt, or Carolina explosive passes. I didn't even look up Burns pressures and Carolina explosive passes because we know it was Joe Mixon's yards per attempt. You ran with that one. So you hit it. I ran with Carolina explosive passes and passed on Mixon. So you nailed that one. The other one was a what will happen first. A missed kick, a Bengals defensive sack, or a Chris Evans target. And there was no Bengals defensive sack. There was no Chris Evans target. So the winner was missed kick. That was your pass. It was my boot. So you won both of them last week. Cool. And I thought there was a Bengals shared sack. I was surprised when I looked to see what time the sack came that there was not one in that game. I thought there was a scoring change, but I scrolled through my Twitter feed and I couldn't find me mentioning a sack. I don't know what I was thinking of. Did you remember? I thought there was a shared one between Hubbard and Hendrickson, but maybe I'm just misremembering.
Off the top of my head, going back to the game, I do not remember.
They do that sometimes where they will do a scoring change. And I know the players don't like it when they take one away from them. Sometimes they give sure them don't. One. Yeah. But we're sitting here at 9 games in and Trey with only 4 sacks, Sam with 3.5.
Bengals growler bet, Jay.
This one, nobody came anywhere close to this one. It was what would be the percentage of rushes to total offensive plays? And you guessed 24.7. I went 33.3, which I thought was high. It was actually a season high, 54.2. The highest guessed on from a listener was 42.3. The Bengals just blew that out of the water. And obviously that happens when Joe Mixon has 5 touchdowns and 151 rushing yards and wins AFC Offensive Player of the Week. But yeah, total pivot from what that offense had been the last few weeks.
Absolutely. That will wrap us up. Again, no walkout. Obviously, we're not going to walk out from nothing this weekend. Everyone enjoy the bye. And then on Tuesday, next Tuesday, we are going to have the Burrow-sode. We are going to go all in on Joe Burrow, his first half, his second half, what is ahead of him, his evolution, hear from people close to him, and some outside observers. We'll look at analytics. We'll do everything. It's all things Joe Burrow coming up on Tuesday in preparation for that Sunday's game against Pittsburgh that will kick off the second half of the season. So really, really looking forward to that. We wanted to kind of make sure we dedicated a full episode and give it what it's worth. If you have not listened to the Uncle Mike episode, Mike Thomas, please, I highly recommend going back and listening to one of the most interesting Bengals that you will come across, and just a super solid dude, a great look at what it's like being an NFL player, what it's been like being a Bengal in comparison to other places. So much more. So thanks everybody for listening. I hope you enjoyed our little flashback, especially those of you that are of a certain age that could hear a bunch of names and situations and make you chuckle again, remembering the bad old days. But anyway, thanks everybody for listening. We will talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.